Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Charlotte Line. This is Dr. John Stamey live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the most amazing place in the world, whether you like it or not. It's a great place. And so glad to be here with my buddies tonight. First of all, from the one and only Des Moines, Iowa. We'll do this in a different order today. Here he is, Brady Van Sickle. How are you doing tonight, Brady?
Doing really good, Dr. John. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to be here, too. It's amazing. I just got back from Charleston, and just, oh, what a day. But anyway, just had to make it back in time for the Charlotte Line. And from Studio G in Greenville, South Carolina, is the one and only, oh, what's his name? Oh, Zach Beechler. How are you doing tonight, Zach? That was a joke.
I got the bottom billing, which means I'm more important.
Is that how that goes?
It's something like that. I don't know. You're asking someone that can barely spell his name, all right?
I mean,
well,
I won't touch that,
us.
But...
spell Zach.
But that one I can do. Z-Q-A...
And the Batman symbol.
Exactly.
R-G.
Two of them. Now, what is
Whatever.
Fabulous...
All right, well, we're glad you're here, too. And,
love it.
So I guess the first order of business... What is the first order of business, Zach?
Fantasy picks. Am I wrong or am I right?
What? Yeah.
I don't know.
Of course you are.
You're the one running the show.
You guys put me in charge of the fantasy league, all right? That's not my fault. But so for the fantasy this week, they were at Phoenix, Arizona. We will talk about racing action. There was ARCA, Xfinity, and Cup. The fantasy league, though, is as simple as it follows. Between the five of us, we all picked two drivers somehow. That is not a joke. It is legitimately, we all picked two drivers. Me and Todd went with Kyle Busch, who was a great pick, as well as Garrett, John, and Brady picked Kevin Harvick. Across the board, everyone either got second or third, so there was no crazy math. Well, the only crazy math was having added up. Todd got Kyle Busch as well as I did, who finished third, getting us 38 points. Todd now has 140 points. In second right now is Garrett, who picked Kevin Harvick, along with John and Brady, who all three of you guys got 39 points. He has 139 points. John is at 119. Brady is at 134. He is in second place, and I am at 122. So it's relatively still close. First and fifth place. He's only 21 points away.
That's pretty close. So I kind of wonder about your math there. I thought I was in second last week, you know?
You still are in second.
Well, hey, listen, Brady. If he can't spell his name, how can he do math? Come on.
Hey.
That's why I'm wondering. I'm questioning his skills
still
here.
It goes Todd with 140, Brady with 134, Garrett with 139, me with 122, and John with 119.
No,
that
no,
doesn't add up,
go.
Zach.
Do that again. Do that again.
Todd was in the lead last week.
Mm-hmm.
You were in second last week.
Yeah.
Okay, but what are their point totals now?
Yeah, because you got Todd at 140. You have Garrett at 139, and me at 134. 134 is less
than
139. Zach?
I meant 130.
Okay. Jeez, all right. Sorry about that. If you're out there listening, Garrett, we're gonna get these technical difficulties worked out one of these days.
Brady, I was on your side. Now you know that, right?
Oh yeah, I knew because you got a doctor.
I heard
you can do math.
Actually, I can. Now, anyway, whatever. It's all good. Well, look, we've got that straightened out. We're all doing okay. We really are.
Mm.
So now, what's next?
Well, I think, and I feel a good thing we need to talk about is this weekend that just passed. The fantastic Phoenix Raceway had a great three races this weekend. The ARCA Menard Series ran on Friday. The Xfinity Series ran on Saturday. And the Cup guys ran this past Sunday. The ARCA Series didn't have too much drama. But some good racing action. There was a lot of drama and a lot of fun, evidently, in the Xfinity series, including a fight, which we haven't seen since, two, 3 weeks ago or something. And
it's
then
been a while.
We also had the series, which a lot of people thought, what?
I was gonna make my standard joke. Listen, I see fights every week. I watch professional wrestling, and I hang out on Papa Stro, the Maestro Show, WCW Retro, every Thursday night. Get my share of fights, guys. You need to come on in.
Apparently, we're slacking.
God, nobody thought that was. Yeah. In fact, I would invite you, and I'd invite everybody. I got to say this: Thursday night, 9 p.m. Papa Stro's show, WCW Retro. It's a great show. It's on blog. It's on VOC Nation. So go to VOCNation.com and check out Thursday nights. He's a great guy, and he has a wonderful show, and you guys are going to get to meet him sooner than later because he comes to all of my events. So anyway, actually, Zach, you met Papa Stro, didn't you? In Somerville.
Yes.
Yes, he looks like a wrestler.
He was very cool.
He is very cool. He puts up with me as a roommate when we're on the road going to Comic-Cons. He has to be cool, you know, and put up with my paranormal stuff, you know. Anyway, all right, I'll be quiet.
Right.
Talk.
Well, I mean, this weekend was action-packed. I mean, we had three different series, and it's not like we had the normal series. We had the ARCA series, which this was the first time they've ever been out that far. Of course, some people say, well, there's the ARCA Menards West, there is, and they will race at Phoenix later. Right, but that used to be the K&N series. The ARCA series itself, the top-tier big boys, has never ran this far out. It is a very interesting, and it was a very... I don't want to say odd, but there were some interesting race incidents, I guess is the best way to happen. One of the biggest ones was Todd Moffitt, the grandson of Richard Petty. He actually had a very hard crash, blowing a tire. It reminds me a lot of Matt Kenseth's crash a couple years ago when he was racing for Joe Gibbs Racing in the 17, blew a tire going well over the 100-some-odd miles per hour and just slammed straight into a wall. Luckily, he was okay after that. Fun fact, I actually have the door off that car. It is sitting either in the storage unit or in my apartment. I don't know right now.
You know, it could be 50-50 with you, honestly.
What is that you've got in your apartment? It's really cool. Right in the middle of the floor. What is it?
Oh, it's a bumper off a NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. And I can say Camping World because that's what it says on it.
Wait, was
yes,
this back
can.
In, I bet I was there when you got that bumper. Was this that Matt Crafton bumper?
Nope. This is a front bumper off of NTS Motorsports, a little older, a team that is no longer racing, but it's a bumper I've been looking for a while, and a very good friend of mine named DJ, he actually got it for me, picked it up for me. I just had to trade him a diecast that I paid $10 for on eBay. Don't tell him.
Oh, hopefully he doesn't listen here, but now NTS, was that a Brendan Newberry piece by chance?
Yep. Well, it's not me, actually. It is that team, but it is a Scott Legacy bumper based off the color, unfortunately. Trust me, I've been trying to get a Newberry piece for a very long time.
Yeah, Newberry was a good piece. I'm really bummed we don't have him around the garage anymore because he was really nice whenever he'd come see us over at the radio station over in Newton for the Iowa Speedway races.
Yeah, he's the Newberry family is very nice, and they were all some great people. We do wish. Hopefully, we'll see them soon. He's kind of silent on the social media, which stinks. But I'm sure at some point we will have him come out.
Oh yeah, I'd imagine.
But the ARCA race was kind of ho hum. Not a lot of action. I rewatched it. I was kind of like, okay, there's some good passing action, but it was dominated by the one, the only. Well. It was a Gibbs car. Let's just say that. Monster Energy. Who was the winner, Brady? Do you know?
I actually didn't actually tune into the ARCA race. I want to say it was Ty Gibbs, though, maybe.
Yes.
Don't quote me on that. Was it Ty Gibbs?
Yep.
Hot damn. I actually did pay attention this weekend.
I did not. But other than that, kind of...
Shame on you.
Because,
no, no. Utter shame. I can feel all the way up here in Des Moines.
I was in Aiken, South Carolina this weekend, so I've watched all the races today. But going off that, we did have a fantastic Xfinity race, a lot of action, a lot of beat and banging. We even had our first set of cup regulars come into play. Kyle Busch in the 54, and the 12 driven by Brad Keselowski.
Yeah, and it really was a good Saturday of racing because it can be kind of hit or miss, but there really wasn't a lull in the action all Saturday long. We ended up having 7 cautions for 45 laps throughout the day, and 7 different leaders, including the aforementioned Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski, getting out front for a little bit there. But surprisingly, it wasn't one of those big cup guys that came down and stole all the glory. The Xfinity drivers, you know, had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, it seemed like, and they raced those guys hard. And it was Brandon Jones, of all people, surprising the field to take the win. What'd you think of that, Zach?
That surprised me, and I know some people be like, what does that surprise you? Brandon Jones is running, you know, top-tier equipment. Here's an explanation on why it is a surprise to me. Brandon Jones has had – I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. He's had grade A equipment and a lot of different stuff. If we just look at his Truck Series stuff, he ran Turner Scott Motorsports stuff at one point. Fantastic team that had, you know, a team that had won before. Turner Motor Scott had Ron Hornaday Jr. racing for them before they shut down and was in contention to win a championship at one point with them. He ran GMS Racing Trucks. Again, same thing. Race-winning trucks never got a win. Even Kyle Busch Motorsports Trucks never got a win in Kyle Busch Motorsports Trucks. His first win across the board for a majority of stuff, K&N and ARCA. And even then, ARCA 2014 to 2018, he only got 5 ARCA wins and never ran a full season. This, though, however, is his, let me see, the 6th season in the Xfinity Series, his 5th full-time season, and he's finally, hopefully, getting into possibly winning. Not just winning, but actually showing that he's supposed to be here. He never really recorded fantastic finishes. You know, yes, he did get very lucky with a second-place finish at Talladega in 2018 for Joe Gibbs Racing, but that was his best finish overall that year. He never won a race that year. Got only one other top 5 and just a handful more top 10s. Last year, he actually, I'll say this, vastly improved coming out of the gate with 2 top 5 finishes at Daytona and Atlanta. Then in Vegas, he didn't have too much luck. But even then, later on that year, he got his first win at the Kansas Motor Speedway. And now he's gone from just in the first 4 races, a 4th, an 8th, a 30th, and a win at Phoenix. Now, I'm hoping that it's this, that he's truly getting either, not, I don't want to say used to it, but that he's actually showing, hey, I belong here and I'm showing you right now.
And that's always been the biggest thing he's kind of come up against in his career. A lot of people have been hard on Brandon Jones because we all know the talent is there. He's shown flashes of brilliance throughout his career, but for some reason he could just never really put together the full package. And you want to talk about a statement-making race. He didn't just luck in with some pit strategy or you know, just caught a couple cautions in the right way. He drove down and passed Kyle Busch for that win. That's what really impressed me, was that it wasn't just, you know, handed to him in his lap. And actually both wins, because if you even go back to his win at Kansas last year, it was a pretty convincing win that he had to drive and claim and take for himself. He didn't, you know, luck into that one either. And I really am glad to see it, because it's about time for make or break for Brandon Jones. He's had, like you said, just numerous opportunities with some of the best equipment in the NASCAR garage, but never really had the opportunity to really showcase what he can do. And I think the crew chief pairing that they got over there at Joe Gibbs Racing with Brandon Jones, he's got a good crew chief that listens to him, can really understand what he's looking for in the car. And Jones himself is just way more mature as a driver. He's got so much starts under his belt now, especially in the Xfinity Series, that he feels a little more confident about what moves he can make. And, you know, he's getting used to the competition that he's racing against. And this will be his third year with Gibbs. And I just think that added repetition of just being in Gibbs equipment, you know, getting all the resources at his disposal, having all the backing and support of the Toyota Racing Development Program, that I think it's finally all coming together for Brandon Jones to really showcase the driving talent that's been there all along and hopefully make a case for him to keep staying where he's at in a top-tier ride for years to come. Because, I don't know, I get bummed out whenever I see a prospect like a Brandon Jones, you know, come through, make a lot of noise, and then just kind of burn out and disappear into obscurity. So I'm really glad that it's not happened with Brandon Jones. And I think you know, a lot of that has to do with the patience that's been given to him has probably come from sponsorship, because any other driver in his scenario, I feel like, would have gotten McCann a long time ago. But he's had lots of good connections. He's been really good with his sponsors, and he's been rewarded by that loyalty helping him get to the point where he's at in his career now, that he's finally starting to reap the benefits, really starting to get those finishes. Maybe a little bit struggling with the consistency, because, as you mentioned, pretty solid start to the season, but there is that glaring 30th at Auto Club just a couple weeks ago. So still a few areas he needs to work on to really make him a championship contender, but it really seems like that whole 19 program is pointed in the right direction. And I don't know about you, Zach. I'm going to be getting your thoughts on this, but coming into the season, I kind of had tempered expectations for Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series as a whole, being that they're three full-time, you know, young, like, rookie drivers, essentially, and then Brandon Jones being the oldest of the three racing full-time for Gibbs with his six seasons under his belt. But I don't know. I felt like without having that full-time, you know, all-star team that Gibbs has always had, where it's been the rotating cast of drivers, usually Kyle Busch or Denny Hamlin, I really thought not having that as a full-time program would hurt the Xfinity program for Gibbs. But so far, they've proven me wrong with an amazing start to the season. If you look at Harrison Burton's stats, he's leading the points, got to win. Brandon Jones been doing pretty good, getting some good top 10s posted up there. He's got to win. And even Riley Herbst has been running pretty consistently. And I was very cautious about expecting anything out of Riley Herbst, because I really wasn't overly impressed with his ARCA stats. So I didn't really think that program was going to amount to much. But so far, Gibbs has been forcing me to eat my words. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I'll say this, and I always give a benefit of doubt for a lot of stuff. So one thing I will say first off the bat, it is still early on in the season. We are only four races in. Xfinity Series itself is 33 races long, and there's still a lot of variance to come about. I know, yes, we've had Daytona, Las Vegas, California, and Phoenix, all four different track types, but it's something that I feel we need to kind of look at as a, you know, okay, they are strong now. They need to keep that going, though, because that's the thing is, excuse me, if they can't keep that going, then the biggest problem is going to be that that's when their failure is going to hit. That's when they're really going to, you know, I don't want to say it, but, you know, you can have a strong start to the year and just peter out. One driver that kind of had that last year was Ryan Sieg. He was phenomenal at the start of the year, and then I don't want to say he petered out, but he had some struggles, and, you know, but he did still finish really decent in a lot of other races, but once, like, the mid-season hit, he kind of struggled a little bit. With Joe Gibbs equipment, we know how steady it is. We know how hard it, you know, it is to beat those guys, and we do know a lot of things about it. But one thing I will say right now, you know, I am impressed with what Ty Gibbs has done and Harrison Burton. You know, alone, the past two races have been won by Joe Gibbs racers, and one of them was a rookie. I feel that this is going to be a great, it's a great start to the year. They just need to keep this momentum going, because if they don't, it's going to be one of those, you know, you might have beaten your words a little too soon. You know, Brandon Jones, like I said, he's had a lot of opportunity. You know, it's not like he hasn't had great A equipment, especially in the Xfinity Series. He's had Richard Childress Racing equipment, which has won championships and has won races, both with the cup-level guys and the non-cup-level guys, a.k.a. Tyler Reddick, as a great example from last year. I think it's a little early still to kind of say I've got to eat my words, just because of the fact that we are, you know, early, and we've had, you know, only four races. Four races is a great way to show, okay, this is how hard we need to be for the rest of the year. If we go down the rest of the lineup or the rest of the finishing order, we had Brandon Jones again winning the race, and then Harrison Burton, who came off a win from Auto Club last weekend, finishing second. Kyle Busch taking third, and he did start on the pole. Brad Keselowski starting fourth, finishing fourth. Justin Haley finishing fifth. Chase Briscoe in the 98 finishing sixth. Noah Gregson finishing seventh. Austin Cindric finishing eighth. Ross Chastain finishing ninth, a really good rebound for him. Riley Herbst finishing 10th. Ryan Sieg finishing 11th. Brandon Brown, who had a little bit of an altercation with the number 90 car. We will get into that, of course. Finishing in the 12th position. Justin Allgaier finished in 13th. Matt Schneider back in the 21 this week, finishing 14th. Jeff Green making a start, finishing in the 93, finishing 15th. Josh Williams finishing 16th. Michael Annette finishing 17th. Dylan Bassett, who had the incident with Brandon Brown in the number 90, finishing 18th. Brett Maupin in the 02, he will be racing again this weekend in Atlanta, finishing 19th. BJ McLeod in the number 0, finishing 20th. Jesse Little in the 4, finishing 21st. Alex LeBay, the Canadian, finishing 22nd. Timmy Hill in the 61, finishing 23rd. Chad Fincham in the 13th, finishing 24th. Ray Black Jr. in the 25th. David Starr in the number 6, who he had a bit of an accident, a bit of an issue going on. Vinny Miller finishing 27th. Tommy Joe Martin finishing 28th. Cody Vandeleur, I believe is his name, who made his first start in the Xfinity Series with the 52 Jimmy Means Racing, finishing 29th. Daniel Hemric, who had just a bad day, finishing 30th. Joe Graff Jr. also having a bad day, finishing 31st. Joe Nemechek lost the clutch. They weren't too sure. Slammed into the wall, finishing 32nd. Stephen Lynch finishing 33rd in the 66. Colby Howard in his debut, not the best way he wanted to, had an accident very midway through the race, finishing 34th in the 15 car. Landon Castle in the 89, finishing 35th. And Jeremy Clements, whose engine expired real early on lap 58, finishing 36th. So it was a vast array in the top 10. The two Cup Series drivers did finish in the top 5, but we also had it's weird. It's a vast variety, and it's also a vast variety of manufacturers. Yes, the top 3 are all Toyotas, but then you had one Ford, two Fords, three Fords in the top 10, and the rest Chevys. And I think that's just shown that the Xfinity Series cars are really well-balanced, I feel, even though we don't have a ton of Fords in it.
Yeah, definitely. It's really, you know, skewed the amount of participants we have from each manufacturer. So the fact that, like you pointed out, that it's very evenly split amongst the three of them, it's really impressive, especially with the Ford banner really only having the two full-time cars carrying their colors all year long. And then, of course, the Team Penske entering the number 12 in select races for a third Ford for most weekends. But, definitely you like to see it, because that's really what NASCAR is striving for. Like, that's been their big number one goal for all these years is, you know, to let the manufacturers have that individuality and really have their personalities shine through, but make the playing field as even, as level as they possibly can, which is not always easy, you know, without, you know, straight up going full IROC and going into a spec series. But the Xfinity Series cars, I think they've really kind of settled into their own niche. They've had this pretty similar aero package with the shorter spoiler and everything now for about 4 or 5 seasons, and they've just tweaked on it, got the cars better. They got that composite body now that's really super stupid resilient. And I just think it's really, you know, evolved to the point where the teams have got a good handle on the cars, got a good handle on the setup, and that the racing product is starting to show, you know, the fruits of the labor of these last years of really perfecting this package. So I really got to tip my hat to everyone involved there. But I've kind of taken a look through the rundown of the race. Zach gave you the finishing order. Like I mentioned, there were the 7 caution flags, 45 laps, the first of which coming out on lap 33 when Ray Black Jr. went for a spin off at turn 2. No other callers involved in that incident. And then we went caution free until the end of stage 1 on lap 47. Then the next caution flag would fly early on in stage 2 with the number 15 going for a spin on lap 85. We would resume and go caution free to the end of the stage 2 break on lap 92. And then racing action would get a little more intense for that third stage. The first caution flag flying in stage 3. Yeah. Number 47, Joe Nemechek getting into an incident off of turn 4 on lap 129. And then the incident that we're going to have to go into a little more detail here in just a minute, as Zach alluded to, on lap 138, the number 68 of Brandon Brown and the number 90 of Dylan Bassett got into an altercation off of turn 4. And that ended up spilling off into the pit lane area after the race. So again, we'll get to that here in just a moment. And then the caution flag of the race came out on lap 144. This one was a 5-car incident featuring the number 8 of Daniel Hemric. Brad Keselowski got a couple little nicks and scrapes from that one, but he was able to recover for his fourth place finish. Also, the number 36, 07, and 08 teammates there for SS Greenlight Racing were swept up in that incident off of turn two. But like we were talking about, we've alluded to it, there's a bit of a fight on pit road. So, like we said, the 68 and the 90, they had that incident, and they never really separated after that incident. They were pretty much right on top of each other for the rest of the race. And then when they pulled in, you know, for the post-race inspection, got out of their cars, both drivers started getting into it. Fists were flying.
Well,
crew members were involved. It was quite a fiasco.
Well, that's the thing. So let's dive into this a little more. So, what happened was Brandon Brown had the inside line. The number 90 of Dylan Bassett was coming down on him, and he spun. They both spun out. Dylan got a little more damage than him. But that happened about what lap was that again? That was on like lap 108 or something like that.
138.
So this was a 300 lap race. He held on to that, or 200 lap race. He held on to that for 60 some laps, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan stopped somehow first. He got out of his car first and just ran from his car over to Brandon. Brandon had just stopped, probably turned off the motor, and just started getting clobbered on by him. And all the videos I've seen, NASCAR officials are running, like legitimately jogging over, like, yeah, you got to stop that cowboy, trying to restrain him, trying to make him stop. And I don't want to say funny, but it is quite interesting, and it is to me a little funny. And at one point, if you watch the television broadcast, Clint Boyer goes like, "I've never, you know, held on to a grudge that long." And somebody in the booth might have been Joey Logano said something along the lines of, "Well, you don't pay attention for that long, anyway."
Yeah, no.
They got a chuckle out.
Honestly, like we were just kind of discussing, I was kind of surprised that a fight broke out, because to me it just seemed like a normal racing incident. Yeah, it sucks for both teams involved, but I didn't really see, you know, any malicious intent that would warrant a pit road brawl. And it was just so early in stage three, 60 whole laps, that he just sat there marinating and stewing on this, just getting it in his head, like, you know what, I'm not going to let go of this. I'm going to get out on pit road. I'm going to do something about it. Just something that I feel like really didn't warrant a reaction. So I don't know. I didn't really see a whole lot of buzz on it, so I don't think it garnered too much attention. But I don't know. It just seemed a little – I feel like the punishment did not fit the crime, if you get what I mean.
I totally agree with you on that. I mean, I do feel like there should have been some words in between the both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But to just jump out your car, run head first into – you know, into his car, which he probably didn't even have his helmet up, but just start punching him in the helmet, which we have seen before. It is not uncommon for that, unfortunately, but it is quite funny at the same time. One thing that did happen throughout this race, though, was if you watched the race, is that there was two Cup regulars in the booth, not just on the track. Joey Logano and Clint Boyer were both up there commentating on the race, and it was quite... From all the highlights and from me rewatching the race, it was actually quite funny. Clint is a party animal. And by the way, one thing I will say real quick, Clint Boyer is going to be testing the car of tomorrow, the next-gen car, I'm sorry, this week or next week, the Monday and Tuesday after Atlanta, and he will be testing it at Atlanta. We'll discuss that, too, before we end tonight's show. But it's kind of fun. I do like this dynamic of having the Cup regulars in the booth talking about it. We have seen it quite a bit, but I think this is one of the first races I've seen where they had two regulars in the booth full for the entire race, and it was quite fun and interesting.
This is something I've definitely loved about the Fox broadcast ever since they became heavily involved with the Xfinity Series with the big shakeup back in 2015 of the TV scheduling, is they've really tried to make their broadcast for the Xfinity Series open to encourage Cup drivers to come down, offer their two cents, offer their insight, their experience to the broadcast. And it's always been a resounding success, because, I don't know, there's just something that you can't get as a journalist, you know, to add that little extra layer of insight, no matter how many races you watch, how much film you study. It doesn't stack up the same as a driver opinion, you know, being that guy that's in the cockpit week in and week out, that little extra insight that a driver can add. And it's also really helped for Fox and NBC
kind of start picking out, you know, drivers to maybe keep an eye on for them as they're looking towards the end of some of these big names' careers as a way to maybe try and lure them over the broadcast booth as a second career. And if you go back to the early days of NASCAR broadcasting, having a driver as one of the commentators is a cornerstone of a NASCAR broadcast. And over the years, especially with Fox kind of taking the lead on this, they've really tried to push that even further. Because we've seen all driver broadcasts a couple times in the Xfinity series. Fox loves to have drivers out on pit lane, have a few seasoned veterans that they know and trust, kind of leading the charge in the booth. And those broadcasts are just so much fun. Because it's super laid back, because the drivers, you know, aren't professional journalists, so it's a little more loose, a little more free as you go, kind of a style to the broadcast. But that just that insight, that level of expertise that the drivers can offer is unparalleled. And it's kind of funny that you point out Clint Bowyer specifically. It may just be me personally, but I feel like the writing is on the wall for how I'm looking at this season. For Clint Bowyer to maybe, depending on how sponsorship and contract deals align, Clint may be using this as his last full-time Cup season as a way to transition into a full-time career in the Fox Sports booth. If you've watched any of the Cup broadcasts, there's a glaring omission there. You're used to seeing three broadcasters lead those broadcasts, but Darrell Waltrip retired last year, and they didn't find anyone to replace him. That was by design. Fox was just kind of, you know, feeling out their options, and they had all the trust, which they should, in Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon to lead those broadcasts. But it, I don't know. To me, it kind of feels like the broadcasts are missing something, and I feel like the way everything's kind of shaping up, you know, with the different development drivers that Stuart Haas has in the pipeline, Tony Stewart himself just wanting anything and everything to get Kyle Larson, into one of his cars. Sponsorship troubles that have been kind of plaguing Bowyer the last few years. I don't know. To me, it just seems like it's all kind of circumventing to maybe a possible Bowyer retirement and then filling the shoes of arguably one of the most iconic broadcasters to ever commentate a NASCAR race as a former driver, being Darrell Waltrip. And if you kind of look at their careers, the stats may not line up, but their personalities, man, are they not two opposite sides of the same coin. Because Bowyer, you know, he always has those fiery interviews, love to pick on and hammer on those journalists. And if you go back and watch any of those old broadcasts from the 80s, Darrell Waltrip was cutting up and doing the same thing. And so I feel like if any driver out there is going to be the heir apparent to boogity, 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 you got to look no further than Clint. But again, that's just me kind of looking into the tea leaves, as it were, and maybe reading more into a situation that maybe not even there. But that'd be something I'm keeping my eye on as the 2020 season progresses and as we start looking forward to 2021 and some major shakeups in the NASCAR garage area.
I want to jump in and say I want to say something to kind of parallel what you said. Being involved in several areas of endeavor, I don't think journalists know what they're talking about. I do not. They've never done it. You get someone that's done it, like in a golf broadcast or one of my paranormal Comic-Con, someone's been out there in the woods and hung out with Bigfoot and stuff like that. They know what they're doing. Journalists just about don't know anything. And I'll go head-to-head with any one of them in those fields because, I mean, you know, the best thing to do is
have to go head-to-head with me on that field because I studied journalism, and I take a little bit of exception to that statement because we're not completely brain dead.
No, you're not. But you're in a different category. I guess you're really into this. About half the journalists are not, and it's just a job. And that's the kind of people that I don't like. You know, people that are really into it. This is your life, so that makes you different than a journalist. I think it makes you better than a journalist.
I definitely get that. There's definitely a lot of journalists out there. You know, I definitely get where you're coming from. It feels like a lot of journalists out there, especially if you look back at some of the different journalists that have kind of filled the roles in motorsports journalism over the last years, I feel like that's definitely the case. Because when you're a sports journalist, you know, especially when I was going through the rigors of my journalism program, not many people really looked at motorsports journalism as being what their end goal was. And I feel like we saw that, especially when Fox's early days, you saw a lot of their football beat writers or their soccer beat writers being assigned NASCAR races against, you know, maybe not what they really wanted to do, but they were just trying to pad that resume a little bit. But you can definitely tell when you have a journalist out there just looking to check a box on the resume, or a journalist that lives and dies with their fellow NASCAR driver out there, who's out there week in and week out because they love the sport. You know, I think of guys like Ken Squire, Barney Hall, you know, Dave Moody, just these iconic voice that built their whole journalism reputation, not off of, you know, talking about what's happening on Wall Street or talking about what's happening in Washington, D.C. They built their whole career about reporting on NASCAR. And so that is something I definitely can agree with you on, that we need more journalists out there.
Those are the guys that need to be talking, because the beat reporters, the ones that, okay, we got to do this week. Oh, it's like, you know, please get rid of them. But you're exactly right. And I think you got my point. I see too much of that in financial reporting. I mean, when you see people that don't know anything about it and they're trying to talk about it, yet the people that trade and the people that really live their life on it, you know, I think living your life, that's good preparation to be a great journalist. Will you agree with that?
Kind of building off, and building off of that, kind of going back to my point about really since 2015, how Fox and NBC have kind of really reshaped and really reanalyzed how they approach motorsports journalism for the NASCAR broadcast. We've seen a ton more drivers being added to things like Race Hub or NASCAR Updates or NASCAR America, being placed on pit road, former drivers being placed as pit lane reporters. And we're starting to see that becoming kind of more commonplace, where you're seeing a lot more drivers make a transition into a journalist role for NASCAR broadcasts, and it works phenomenally. These drivers are really put through their paces with all their interview requests, all their media obligations, though they kind of minor in journalism without even really meaning to, just trying to drive a race car each week. And that's been super helpful for NBC, especially as when they came back into the sport after a 10-year hiatus to try and rebuild their program, you know, and reestablish some of their lead broadcasters. They still got good guys like Rick Allen that kind of direct the broadcast, but I like that they've added more NASCAR personnel to kind of diversify the roster a little bit, to really add that inside home, and then have, you know, a guy like a Rick Allen, a steady, calm, knowledgeable journalist to kind of guide the ship, as it were, and keep the drivers from going off the rails and going on to tangents and stories, you know.
All right. Well, I wanted to get my 2 cents, and thank you for letting me explain. No aspersions on people that love the sport. That's who you want. Whether they've been out there on the golf course, or they really love the sport. Going back to golf, because I'm a golfer. That's all that really matters. And I just don't like these people that don't know what they're talking about getting on there because, well, so-and-so couldn't make it today. So here I am. Hey, anyway, I'll shut up and get back in the background. Until I yell again.
I think that pretty much puts the bow on our Xfinity recap. We want to make this segue into our Cup Series.
Well, kind of. Somebody in the Xfinity series got a lovely call to the NASCAR hauler. I think we kind of need to talk about that real quick.
I must have missed that one. Who got called to the hauler?
Noah Gregson.
Noah Gregson got called to the hauler? What for?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did. Before first practice, he was called into the NASCAR hauler for an incident that happened.
Oh, I thought it was after the race. Oh, this was talking about them going over what happened last week in Auto Club.
The week before at Las Vegas, yes. So, Gregson got a lovely call and a lovely visit to the NASCAR hauler, which means one of two things. Either he's getting a special award, which only happens once in a blue, never actually happened, or he's getting a talking to, which Phoenix seems to be the track that a lot of drivers like to make a confession on something, and then they get a fun field trip to the hauler. One big one last year was Bubba Wallace when he intentionally spun himself. What happened next? Oh, of course, he got called into the NASCAR hauler at Phoenix, and even though it was 2 weeks prior. So just an interesting thing we need to throw out there. Gregson, who spun Matt Schneider in Las Vegas, when he finally admitted it, or someone finally said that it actually happened, Yeah, just thought I'd throw that one out there.
Well, and I think that NASCAR just always does that in instances like that, just to get ahead of the problem, you know, not let it fester, you know, not do anything about it, and then end up with a situation where it's too late to address the problem. And Noah's a good kid. I've really kind of felt for him after winning that race at Daytona. It's been a rocky start to 2020, because it's been the highs of the highs with, you know, the fourth place finish, second race of the year, getting a first win, but then taking out Myatt at Las Vegas, getting swept up in a wreck at Auto Club. Not really what that young driver was looking for at all, to kind of continue what's been so far a good start to the season. But I think it worked. He ran a very, very clean race at Phoenix. So whatever NASCAR had to talk to him about, I think the message was received. And he was running around the top 10 before. Yeah, he finished right there in seventh. So, I mean, it was probably for the best, just to calm him down. He's a young guy, you know, got a lot of energy, got a lot of excitement to him. So probably best just NASCAR just kind of come in, put their finger on the scale just ever so slightly and say, hey, we get it. We appreciate your enthusiasm. We love what you're doing before, but rein it back in a little bit. You know, just dial back a little bit.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get that before we continued on to the fun cup race. Now, this race was – So one thing I want to say is there was a lot of people, because I was in Aiken, South Carolina, doing some work. I didn't get to watch the race. I did get to see a lot of the highlights, and I was able to do some, watch a majority of the race today, because they get posted up on YouTube. If you go to NASCAR's YouTube channel, you will see that they post their the races in full there. It is my favorite thing now. But one cool thing that I must say is that there was some fantastic racing, but social media thought the first stage was quite boring. They're like, oh, this race is going to be a snooze fest. Then after that, something changed, I feel. Am I wrong?
I mean, NASCAR fans are always going to gripe and complain because, I mean, what else we got better to do? But I honestly would kind of disagree on that. If anything, I would think that stage two would be the snoozer, because stage one we had two like incidents right off the bat there towards the end, with the 47 and the 53 getting into an incident, and then the big wreck between the 2, the 11, and 12 taking out three really potent cars right there on lap 65. Like, that to me set the stage for what really was all afternoon. And if any of the stages were weak, I thought stage two was, because if you look at the incident report there was just one incident in stage two, and that was for the number three car of Austin Dillon grenading a tire on lap 132. So I'm not sure what NASCAR Twitter's got all up in a gripe about this time, but if any of the stages weren't that exciting, to me, I thought stage two was the weaker of the two.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like I said, I didn't get to see an absolute ton of it. Because I was, because I was in Aiken, South Carolina, doing some work. But it is just interesting, and to me, I feel it was a really great race, and I think too, this is going to be a great practice race for the end of this year. And one big thing, and the big reason I say that, is because of the fact that this will now be the championship race for the year. They will not be going to Homestead, Miami for the end of the championship. Instead, they will be doing it in Phoenix. And I feel this might be a big what's the best way to put it? A big
test session almost.
Yeah, I feel that, especially when it comes to who we feel are going to be in the championship four. I do love the fact that we have this whole, I don't know. I love this race. I love this racetrack. I'm glad it's not called ISM or whatever it was supposed to be called for 10 years. I feel that it was a great race overall. There was a lot of racing action. There was a lot of wrecks. There was a lot of great passes and a lot of green flag and green white checkered finishes.
And the one thing with this race, it was also kind of a really important race for the sport as a whole, because this was the introduction to NASCAR's 2020 low downforce package. Visually, if you were looking at the cars on Sunday, they looked almost like a dead out of straight out of 2018, the last time we ran a lower downforce package full time in the Cup Series. There's some different minor nuances to like the brake ducting and the air work and maybe a little slight tweak to the splitter that make them not exactly the same as they were in 2018, but essentially it's the same principle. This year NASCAR kind of taking almost a Generation 4 approach for all you fans out there. Generation 4 kind of like the late 90s, early 2000s NASCAR, where they have three different aero packages depending on the type of racetrack. You got your mile and a half package, which is what we saw for most of the first few races of the season, what you saw at Auto Club, what we saw at Vegas, where it's what we've seen out of racing the last 2 years in 2019 with that kind of taller spoiler, a little bit of a lead edge on the splitter, and it creates more downforce and hopefully in their eyes creates a little bit of more of a draft, kind of like a pack kind of deal on those bigger tracks. And then, of course, Talladega Daytona, they've got an even gaudier, bigger spoiler, which I don't know how that was even conceivable, that they could get a bigger spoiler on the back of them damn things. And the bumpers are also lower on the plate cars to make for a bigger surface area for the bump drafting. And those also have hella drag on those cars. So that's why we see the big packs and why we really see them bunched up at Talladega and Daytona. But for the tracks, 1 mile and less, and then our two road courses, NASCAR saw the races last year in 2019 with the higher downforce package, and they saw what a lot of fans saw was terrible racing. The cars were just so bogged down by the air. There was just too much dirty air being caused by those gaudy spoilers that you couldn't race side by side on some of NASCAR's most close quarters banging, you know, short tracks out there, which there's a lot of debate. I personally don't consider Phoenix a short track, but for the definition of this argument, it is a short track for NASCAR's package. And after last year's two Phoenix races, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I was not looking forward to this weekend because last year's two races at Phoenix, I thought, were some of the worst racing I've seen in the Gen 6 era of NASCAR since 2013. There just wasn't any passing. The cars were just so slow looking. I was very, very displeased with how Phoenix, you know, panned out last year. But I was so glad when NASCAR, you know, started the season saying, hey, look, We heard you. This package is good for the mile and a half racing, but now our short track racing is suffering. So they went in. Like I said, they brought back that, dusted off the old aero package from 2018, 2017 with that really short itty-bitty blade spoiler, and it worked. I mean, granted, this wasn't going to be a full test because even though it's only been a season without this package, you know, they still got to, you know, work the kinks out. Especially for Ford and Chevy, they got different body styles that they're working with now than what they had in 2018. So that's also a curveball that those two manufacturers had to work around in getting this lower downforce package ready for the 2020 Cup Series program. But overall, I mean, you have to be pleased with the end result. We saw plenty of good side-by-side action, plenty of incidents to kind of keep things kind of close and bunched up. And honestly, Sunday, I made a deal with my girlfriend that we'd watch the first two stages of the race, and then we'd pause it on the TiVo so we could play some video games and whatnot, and then pick it up later in the evening. And while I definitely enjoyed that, it was so hard to hit that pause button at the end of stage two because I was on the edge of my seat. The racing was intense. But, you know, love is blind. Like, love is worth it for that, I guess.
Well, like I said,
funny, Brady.
I know, right? It's just for you, Dr. John. Yeah. I figured you'd appreciate that.
Debatable.
Exactly. It's like pulling me. I'm sorry, I'm going to say this, then, Zach, you can talk. That's like telling me in the middle of a Bigfoot conference, John, you need to leave for 2 hours. No, I'm sorry. Not going to do
it. It was hard, but like I said, it ended up being worth it because when I eventually hit playback on my TiVo and we resumed that stage three, whoo, buddy, was it worth it because, man, that racing was fantastic, that final stage.
So, like you did make some great points, and I will start with this. You start about the aero package. Yes, it is the new low air force small short track aero package / road course. I did like it. Like you did say, it did give us some feels of early 2018. I did love that package because it made the drivers work harder. I do want to see that package at some tracks like Kansas or if they were to come to Iowa, I would love to see that, which obviously it would because it is under a mile. One thing I do want to mention, though, is that this was the first time that the teams got to try this package, as you said. And there was a lot of teams that were unsure going into the weekend how to work with it. Because of the fact that there was a lot less downforce, you would really have to use up possibly use up your tires more or use your skill more. And to me, it is skill, because you can – those tires are – tires in NASCAR – at Phoenix are not that bad, except for the fact there's so much micro debris on the track itself. I remember someone posted a photo online of them just rolling tires from Goodyear to or not even Goodyear, rolling them from the hauler to the garage, less than 25 feet, and they're just covered in micro debris, just small pebbles and stuff. And that's the same on the track for a lot of the surfaces. It is a great race surface. It's a great race track, and I feel like this was a fantastic race. I mean, we had Joey Logano getting his second win of the season, and also he is not the first driver to get multiple wins this season. But he also, you know, he didn't get it fairly easily. I mean, if you look at the top five itself, we have Joey Logano, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch. By the way, those three have won at Phoenix before, and all three have, you know, been dominant there before. We had Kyle Larson, who was up there, and we also had Clint Bowyer, which was a surprise to me to see him doing really well out there in Phoenix.
It really was a surprise, because he was definitely not on my fantasy pick, but that's what I like to see, though, is Bowyer kind of stepping up, because, like I've already stated, I'm very apprehensive about his racing future, and so every top five and top ten run for that 14 just bolsters the hope that maybe I'll be wrong and he'll be in the Cup Series for a few more years. But the one thing I feel like with this aero package, you know, when you ask them a lot with what their favorite era of NASCAR was, a lot of people will point to the late 90s, early 2000s, that particular race car. And that was dubbed the Gen 4. And the Gen 4 had provided some really great racing. And a lot of people, you point to the ride height, you know, that we didn't have splitters back then. The cars weren't sealed off to the ground. And many people point to that for being the reason why we had good racing. I am one of those people that feel like that's the case. But NASCAR is very committed to the splitter design, very committed to having these cars sealed off to the ground and very low. And so I feel like the next thing you have to take a look at is the other thing that Gen 4 did really well, which is what I was talking about earlier, and the fact that they didn't have a one solution, one-size-fits-all kind of way of approaching the racing back then. Different tracks had different, you know, setups and different aero packages specifically for that track, because you can't approach each track with the same, you know, with the same way of thinking and thinking it's going to turn out great racing. Like, you can't take a Bristol car to Daytona and expect it to run good. And the same is true with your aero package. You can't take what runs well at Daytona and expect it to run really well at a Martinsville racetrack. So I really like that NASCAR. It's kind of went back in time a little bit, taking some of those notes from the early 2000s and started maybe working towards finding a way where we can have three different packages, kind of like what we have now, to really try and tailor the package to the style of racing. So that way we're not trying to just all the racetracks into one, you know, five-pound sack and just say, oh, there it goes. If you don't like the racing product, well, then you just hate what we're doing. So I really applaud the direction they're heading with this. And from the early tests of the next-gen car, we've seen it with a big, you know, gaudy spoiler like what we've seen at mile-and-a-half tracks currently, and we've seen it with a little itty-bitty spoiler. So I'm thinking NASCAR's really looking at 2020 as their real guinea pig for if this is the direction that they want to head going forward. And personally, I really hope this is something they go forward. If they're not going to get those cars off the ground and get rid of those stupid splitters, this is the next best case scenario for NASCAR to really bring back that close competition and really make racing great at all of their tracks, not just a certain handful.
I do agree with that, especially now as you kind of need to know how to wheel these cars. Just going through the running order real quick, like I said, Joey Logano finishing first. First, Kevin Harvick finishing second, Kyle Busch in third, Kyle Larson. By the way, we have the Kyles finishing up in the top five, Clint Bowyer in fifth, Kurt Busch finishing in sixth, Chase Elliott with a fantastic finish of 7th. He has won at that track before, not in the Cup Series, but in the Xfinity Series. Eric Almirola finishing 8th. Cole Custer getting a great finish for himself, even scoring some stage points, finishing 9th. William Byron finishing 10th. Brad Keselowski finishing 11th. Jimmy Johnson finishing 12th. Matt DiBenedetto finishing 13th. He has not finished outside the top 20 so far this season. That's really good for him. Alex Bowman finishing 14th after coming off his win from Auto Club. Ty Dillon finishing 15th in the Geico Chevy. That's a good finish for him, as well as Arizona's own Michael McDowell and my guy finishing 16th after going from 2 laps down to finishing on the lead lap and top 20. Really good for him. Chris Buescher in the 17th position finishing there with the 17 car. Ryan Preece finishing 18th. Bubba Wallace finishing 9th. Denny Hamlin not having the best race that he could have, finishing 20th. Daniel Suarez finishing 21st. Really good for him and his guys in the 96 car. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. finishing 22nd. Ross Chastain still filling in for Ryan Newman, finishing 23rd. Christopher Bell finishing in the 95 car, 24th. John Hunter Nemechek finishing 25th, making his first start at Phoenix in a Cup. Or no, this is his second start. I take it back. He raced there last year. J.J. Yaley in the 52, finishing 26th. Corey LaJoy finishing 27th after having a little bit of a hiccup. Eric Jones finishing 26th. Joey Gay finishing 29th. Reed Sorensen finishing 30th. Brendan Poole, your favorite, finishing 31st. Martin Truex Jr. finishing 32nd. Tyler Reddick, who just had some misfortune, finished in the top 10 in both stages, finishing 33rd with an accident. Quinn Hoff in a 00, finishing 34th. Garrett Smithley in a 51, finishing 35th. Austin Dillon, 36th. Ryan Blaney, 37th. And Timmy Hill in the 66th, finishing 38th. And there's some big names back there in the back. Ryan Blaney, Austin Dillon, Tyler Reddick, and Martin Truex Jr., all finishing outside of the top 30, all with different incidents, engines, or accidents. That was kind of big to see some of those big drivers finishing way back there.
Oh, yeah, no, that was definitely the precedent for the afternoon. That's actually a perfect way to segue into our caution recap. There were 12 different cautions for 73 laps, the first of which came out on lap 59 for the number 47, going for a spin off the bumper of the 53 off of turn 2. Race restarted on lap 63, but was quickly halted again on lap 65 when that three-car incident coming off of turn 4 took out the number 12 and ended his day. The number 11 of Denny Hamlin sustained some heavy damage, but he was able to soldier on for a 26th place finish. Is that where you had Hamlin at?
Yes.
And then Brad Keselowski was also able to soldier on. Keselowski really looked good there for a while. He even won stage 2. I really was shocked that his car was that competitive. He kind of waned there towards the latter laps of stage 3, but surprisingly, he was able to recover quite well after that wreck there early on in stage 1. The third caution flag flew for the stage 1 conclusion on lap 77. We restarted, and then we had our third caution flag of the day on lap 132, a pretty wide green flag stretch there for most of stage 2. That caution coming for Austin Dillon losing a tire off of turn 3. His number 3 car would be done for the day. Race would restart on lap 137, and we go green until lap 190 when fluid on the front stretch from the number 51 forced the end of stage 2 a lap early. That ended up just being the stage 2 conclusion, so kind of a 2-for-1 caution there. We restarted on lap 199 and then quickly had another turnaround for a yellow flag on lap for the number 00 of Quinn Hoff going for an incident off of turn 2. Restarted on lap 221, and then the 7th caution flag flew on lap 253 for the number 20 of Eric Jones going for an incident off of turn 2. He went for a spin right off the bumper of Cole Custer off of turn 2. Then we restarted on lap 258. Caution flag flew once again on lap 266. This is the 8th caution flag for the number 8 of Tyler Reddick, and this one was a heartbreaker. Reddick was running solidly in the top 10 for much of the afternoon and looked poised for maybe a really solid outing for his number 8 Chevrolet. He had a 9th place running at the end of stage 1 and a 4th place showing at the end of stage 2, but unfortunately would not get the finishing result that afternoon warranted after he also had a tire go down and hit the outside turn 2 wall. So both RCR guys had great days but don't have the finishes to really showcase for it. The 9th caution flag would fly on lap 278 for the number 17 of Chris Buescher having a cut tire off of turn 1.
We would restart on lap 282 and then quickly have another turnaround for a caution flag on lap 284 when the number 19 got pinched by the number 10 of Eric Amarola. That was Martin Truex Jr. ending up in the outside turn one wall. The number 48 of Jimmy Johnson also sustained damage in that incident. We restarted on lap 288 and then had our 11th caution flag on lap 305, this one for the number 6 of Ross Chastain going for a spin in front of the number 41 of Cole Custer and the 24 of Chase Elliott on the front stretch. And then our final caution flag, this one would be waving on lap 311, setting up the green-white checkered finish. This one for the number 47 of Ricky Stenhouse Jr. getting into an incident with the number 38 of John Hunter Nemechek. And then that would set up the final run to the checkered flag, which was claimed by number 22, Joey Logano.
Yeah, it was an interesting race because of the fact that we had a few cautions at the beginning, green flag, stage caution, basically all of stage two caution free, and then mayhem just ensued. I do love this track. I do love this race, and I legitimately love the fact that we get to come to a unique track too, because first off, there is a big, I don't want to call it runoff, but a shortcut you can take a little bit at the Phoenix, where you can basically cut the, I guess, what's the best way you can call that little corner they have on the back?
The official term for what Zach's describing for all listeners out at home. So if you're picturing your typical oval where it's got, you know, one big corner, kind of like a paperclip shape, like on each end, and then just two straightaways that kind of creates almost like a paperclip shape. Now, Phoenix, it's got that shape, but instead of having a straight, you know, front stretch like most tracks, it kind of comes up at an angle, and it kind of looks like the official term is called a dog leg, because it kind of has that kind of almost bent shape of a dog's rear hind leg. And so rather than being a true oval, it kind of comes up at a point there on the front stretch, which they've turned into the start-finish line. So that is the area that Zach is kind of highlighting there for you. And like you said, drivers, since that whole area is paved, it's so wide, we're literally seeing drivers dive off the pavement, slam themselves onto the apron, and then just kamikaze their way back up onto the racing surface before they get to turn three. It creates some really intense moments, and if you don't time it right, it could come up right in front of oncoming traffic and completely take out three or four guys without even meaning to.
Yes, so that's why I say it's interesting, because this track has a little, you know, it has a dog leg which you can cut, and if you play the video games, trust me, you can cut it. I've done it several times playing the NASCAR Heat. But also, much as that, the start-finish line is not on your quote-unquote normal area. It is not on the middle of the front stretch. Instead, where is it? Oh, of course, it's in the middle of turns one and two, which makes for interesting racing now, because you can't really – I don't feel like you can, as of right now, have that that finish what's the best way to call it? You can't have really a photo finish, but you can have some dramatic racing action going into the turn to get that final – or to get that win, which will be very interesting coming in the fall when we have the final race there this season.
You know, going into this weekend, I was – not looking forward to this being our championship deciding race, but I gotta say, after the racing action that we were treated to all Sunday afternoon, they're slowly working on me. They're turning me into a believer, and I'm definitely super excited to see this package back in action in a couple weeks at Martinsville and at Bristol, and then when we get to the road courses especially. The road courses were a bit of a letdown for me last year for the same reason that Phoenix was let down, because up until 2019, the road course racing was some of the best action we saw. And I really attribute it to this low downforce package really making the racing there super close, because you had no aero dependencies. Those were really, truly the cars without really a whole lot of aero, you know, messing up how they're going through the corners there. So I'm glad we're going back to that. And I just feel like the more time the teams have to apply this package to the 2020 Cup Series car, the better the racing product is going to be, especially as they get their hands around it. And so I feel like, maybe even by May, by the time we start getting to Richmond and some of these other short tracks, that we're really going to start to see these teams turn a corner and make that racing even more on the edge and closer. So I think it was a really good way to set the tone for another exciting racing weekend coming up this week in Atlanta.
So, yes, we will be at Atlanta this weekend. excuse me, which is a interesting track. So before we get into why it's an interesting track, we will be having the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series, and this will be the first race of the Bounty for the Truck Series. We have Kyle Busch entered in, and as of right now, the only other driver that I have seen is is Chase Elliott in the number 24 Hooters. It's like the Hooters Spirits, I believe, is the
yeah, like their liquor or whatever they're getting into now.
Now we understand the Hooters Spirit, don't we?
Oh yeah, we got Spirit. That's, how about you?
What?
That was a joke. You can tell I had a hard day. I had a hard day working with the Walking Dead guys, so it's just been one thing after another. You know, one person coming up out of the grave.
You turned into a zombie?
No, they were already zombies. I had to, no, really. You know, because I run events and probably dealing with eight of the actors from The Walking Dead, trying to get everybody situated for events and things like that. And so that's what's made me so irascible today. That's where that earlier comment came from. But anyway, I'll be quiet. But we all do know the most important thing about Hooters. It's obviously the chicken wings.
The wings. Yeah.
I'm just not going to say anything.
What? They're good. You put enough jalapeno ranch dressing on them, and they're great.
I've actually never eaten at a Hooters, but I've heard from Steph's dad that he actually really does like the wings, and I know he's commenting on the food because he's a very, very proper guy. You know, he likes to look after himself. You know, wants to conduct himself in a very dignified way. So, I could definitely say if he's saying he likes it for the food. He's one of the few people that I feel like I could actually believe dating that and being completely honest.
The food gets about a 1.5, and the personnel get about an 8.5, okay?
Fair enough.
Is that a proper way to put it?
I think so. Like I said, I've never eaten there, so I'll have to take your word on that, Dr. John.
Check out a wing, okay?
Yeah, for some reason, Iowa doesn't have Hooters. We got Twin Peaks. Same concept, but we don't have Hooters up here.
Oh, we have a Twin Peaks in Jacksonville, North Carolina, the home of Camp Lejeune and the Marines. Really, Twin Peaks has got great food.
Oh, phenomenal food.
Obviously,
yeah, I had wings there. Phenomenal.
What does this
food.
Show come down to?
Oh, you know, just a little fast food connoisseur hour with Dr. John and Brett. No, I'm just kidding.
That's right. Wow. And the great and of course, The Walking Dead. I mean, what more can you say?
Zach,
get with the program now, buddy, okay?
So, honestly, that would actually be really cool. If we could get the Charlotte line on tour, we could make that totally something like, hey, are you coming to the race this weekend? We have scouted out these different restaurants that you should totally hit up while you're in town enjoying some racing. But that's for way down in the future when we can get some backing on this thing.
We'll see.
So, like I was saying...
All right, Zach, go on.
Racing.
That's right, Zach. We're keeping you from doing your job. So I will stop instigating trouble. Zach, the floor is all yours. Until we mess with you again, okay?
You guys are fine. No, well, what I'm saying. Was
no, we're not.
This is the first race, first of four races this for the rest of this year, where there is going to be. The big bounty, $100,000+ bounty for a Cup season regular to beat Kyle Busch in the NASCAR Gander Mountain Outdoor Truck Series. The only driver this weekend that is scheduled to do it is Kyle. Again, I want to say Kyle Larson. He is not. That's next week at Homestead. It is Chase Elliott in the number 24 GMS truck. But there's some other notables that are on this entry list that are kind of different. One big one is, well, Jeff Burton and Ryan Truex. We are having two drivers who are not competing full-time in the Nice Motorsports stable. Ryan Truex will have the Plan B sales, and Jeff Burton, who will make his one of, I believe, two starts as of right now, State Water Heaters 44. He will be racing for Nice. We also have Timmy Hill, who will be racing in in his Hill Motorsports 56, along with Clay Greenfield, who did not make the race at Daytona, unfortunately, but is coming back at Atlanta. And his truck, by the way, It looks spectacular. Recently in Nashville, there was a tornado that went through Nashville, Tennessee, and that's where he kind of calls home for himself. And he is going to be having a lot of support and a lot of basically good causes on that truck for the race this weekend. Other notables, J.J. Yaley and Josh Palicki will be in the 33 and the 34 truck. Brendan Poole will not be in the 30 truck. He'll actually be in the 29. It is still the on-point motorsports, but Danny Bone will be in the number 30 on-point motorsports. He actually made his debut last year at Martinsville in the spring race, where he finished 8th, I believe. It's a little hard to tell because at the end of that race, there was so much going on with the a spin and beat and banging. His truck was very clean, and then coming out of turn 4, but heading to the start-finish line, it got tore up, but he still finished in the top 10. We also have TJ Bell Jr., who will be racing the number 12 Young Motorsports, which that's going to be first time we've seen him in quite a while. But we also just have a lot of the regulars as well. Angela Rush in the 00, Sheldon Creed, Tyler Pugel, and Jordan Anderson, and so on. We don't have any other out there drivers racing this weekend, but it's going to be interesting because there's 38 trucks on the docket, and 4 will go home, and it's going to be interesting to see who's going to be one of the go-or-go-homers.
Oh, yeah. To be completely honest, I've really missed truck racing the last 2 weeks. Don't get me wrong. We've had some great racing, but I've got such a soft spot in my heart for those trucks, and I'm so happy that they're back in racing action this weekend, especially at Atlanta Motor Speedway. The last few years, the truck event has been a non-miss event because that racing surface is so worn out, so rugged. And those trucks, they're so light. They just literally dance across that racing surface. So if you have nothing planned for this weekend and you want to watch some really great racing, I highly recommend of all three racing series is that you definitely tune in to the truck race, which I believe is Saturday afternoon. I have to look at my start times here. But no, like you said, it's really kind of odd that we've kind of seen this over the last year, but not many, you know, cup drivers dipping their way down, not many, you know, other full-time drivers kind of stinking at the show. The truck series really and truly has kind of become its own, you know, standalone independent property where it really has its own stars, has its own, you know, starring teams even. And what I love about the truck series, you have just a nice mix of youth and veterans and drivers that are kind of in the middle rung there. Drivers like Matt Craft and Johnny Sutter that are just key, you know, pillars of the third rung of NASCAR, the truck series division. But then you got all these rookies like Rafael Lassard and Christian Eckes trying to make a name for themselves. And so I'm super stoked. But you've kind of brought up something I want to ask you about, because you, like you've said a few times on the show, you've got some friends over at Nice Motorsports and some different buddies that work for the team. I must have misread the opening announcement when they announced that they were going to run that 40 truck, because I thought it was just going to be a one-off truck for a few races that Ryan Truex is bringing in sponsorship. But so far, they've been in all three races to start the season. Do you know if they're planning to run three full-time trucks this year?
Well, so the big thing with the three trucks, it does sound like it, as long as there is a driver with money coming to it. That's the biggest thing for them. Ty Majeski, of course, is going to be in the 45 for the whole season. The 44 will have a mixture of drivers from Jeb Burton and Natalie Decker. Not too sure who else is lined up, but it really is just going to depend on who can bring money to the table. As of right now, I haven't been told whether or not they're going to be running full-time. They might have announced it somewhere, but it's going to be one of those things where they ran two trucks full-time last year and a part-time third truck. They could be doing this again. One thing I do want to say, though, if you go over to Nice Motorsports' Facebook page, and I even think Ty Majeski's Facebook page, they have the Daytona flip-over truck in the lobby right now on casters for people to take photos of.
Oh, no way.
Yep, with a few big photos of that truck, or of the wreck itself.
Okay, that's actually really, really cool. If you're in the Charlotte area, you got to go and see that. That's really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see a truck that mangled up just kind of on display for everyone to see. So if you're in the area, definitely make it down. Check that out.
They are in Statesville, North Carolina, just north. Take 77 north, and you will find it. Just make sure you have your GPS because it's legitimately kind of in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, the truck series, I can't wait. I love it too. I think me and Brady are on the same page. It's one of our favorite series in NASCAR in general. I do love the trucks. I have so much stuff off trucks. I got a bumper. I got quarter panels. Shoot, I got a Goodyear fender from Ross Chastain's Eldora truck that I'm looking at right now. So I've got plenty of stuff for that. But we also have the other two series. The Xfinity series will be racing this weekend, and there's there's a name on there that last year was causing some hullabaloo, I guess is the best way to say it. Jeffrey Earnhardt will be coming back to the track in the number 15 for Johnny Davis Motorsports.
And now this is definitely a story that I'll be keeping an eye on. I've been watching Jeffrey's career literally since the beginning back in 2008 when he was making one-off starts for Rick Ware Racing in the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series, you know, running partial schedules with his dad at the time, Gary Earnhardt. And it's just been such an up-and-down struggle for that young man trying to make a name for himself in the sport. And many people out there would think, oh, he's an Earnhardt. It must be easy for him to get sponsors. But that's just not been the case. He's rarely had a good capable equipment at his disposal. His best opportunity coming last year for Joe Gibbs Racing, which I'm still kind of miffed about what all went on there. He had a really good relationship with sponsor IK9, which was a police training for dogs deal, something or another. And it seemed like that was going to be his ticket. That relationship opened up the door for him to get a Toyota Racing Development contract, which led him to getting select starts last year for the Joe Gibbs Racing number 18 entry. And he capitalized on it. He led a lot of laps at Daytona, had great racing in some of his other outings, even got a second place finish at Charlotte. But then halfway through the season, something happened with IK9. I don't know if they were into some shady business, you know, in the same vein as DC Solar, because they kind of just fell off the face of the earth. But Jeffrey severed ties with them first. And then quietly over the course of 2019, their involvement with Joe Gibbs Racing as a team kind of went by the wayside. But the real, you know, sad bit of that was that Jeffrey Earnhardt, who finally, you know, scrapped and clawed his way into a high profile ride, now has to start completely at the bottom again. But he's not landed too far. JD Motorsports, even though they don't have the funding of the bigger teams, they are such an important cornerstone of the Xfinity Series, and they have turned out countless of young drivers. You know, you think of Landon Castle, you think of Ross Chastain, drivers that have gone on to really showcase what they can at other teams because they've gone through the JD Motorsports, you know, regimen of take care of the equipment, get the most out of the equipment, just really, really works drivers to their, you know, their limits to really press them, develop their skills, and really their car control. And so I think this is a great opportunity for the young Earnhardt to kind of, you know, bounce back and hopefully maybe get his career pointed back in the right direction. We've seen Ross Chastain do this exact same thing. And so hopefully it'll work out the same for Jeffrey. And also, if you're a big fan of the Earnhardts out there like I am, you kind of have to smile at an Earnhardt stepping back behind the wheel of number 15 after Dale Earnhardt, you know, campaigned two fairly successful seasons for the number 15 of Bud Moore back in the early 80s. And then, of course, Dale Earnhardt Incorporated having the iconic number 15 Napa Chevy of Michael Waltrip for the early part of the 2000s. So, I don't know. For me, that little bit of nostalgia has got me super excited. I'm a huge Jeffrey fan. I follow him on Instagram. He seems like a really down-to-earth kid. And I don't know. I'm hoping that this will be his break to hopefully, you know, get things kind of slowed down, put the brakes on some of this backtracking he's done over the last year, and then start clawing his way back towards the summit of the mountain. And if there's anything that these trials and these tribulations that are going to teach him, it's just, you know, it's going to be that patience and just that real appreciative, just really having an appreciative attitude when he finally does get that next big ride, which hopefully will be soon, and hopefully he'll do well in these JD Motorsports runs to really warrant a second shot at a big-time cup ride.
For sure, and you know, the biggest thing from last year, IK9 is still going on. It's not like they're shut down or anything, but it was Jeffrey who walked away from it, and no one knows. I actually saw him at Martinsville when I was there for the truck race. I was like, Jeffrey is here, but he's not racing. This is interesting, and it was actually the year before at Martinsville where he kind of didn't show up. He didn't show up at all for the race. He was supposed to race in the 96 car, but DJ Cunningham, who was running in the Premium Motorsports 49, hopped from the truck into the Cup car because Jeffrey wasn't racing. And like I said, Jeffrey nor his father were there that weekend. But this weekend we have it's more or less the same array of the usuals: BJ McLeod, Brett Moffitt in the 02, Joe Graff Jr., Daniel Hemric will be in the 8 cars again this weekend. Chad Benson will be in the 13. Jeffrey Earnhardt in the 15. Matt Schneider still in the 21. Ryan Sieg still going to be coming back, still coming hard in the 93. In his home state, Joe Nemechek will be in the 47. Tony Bennett will be in the 14 and 15 in the 51. The 66 will have Stephen Lynch. Bailey Curley will be in the 74. Let's see. And Mason Mason will be in the 99 for BJ McLeod. So we kind of have a full field for the Xfinity Series, 36 cars for 36 spots, so nothing too crazy with that one, luckily.
Oh, yeah, no. Thankfully, no one will have to go home, and hopefully everyone will have a good race there. And honestly, the Xfinity Series will be a pretty good race, too. With that lower downforce packs that the Xfinity cars have, you know, with that shorter spoiler, they're going to be, you know, really fighting for grip on those high banks of Atlanta with that worn-out surface. So tires will definitely be a premium, I feel like. Especially with the way Goodyear's been approaching these race weekends. We haven't talked about it much on our show, but Goodyear has been hitting it out of the park with their tires they've been bringing so far to start 2020. They've had good tire wear, but they've had good durability at the same time. And that's really all you want from a racing tire, something that's going to hold up to the pressures and the rigors, but it's not super stiff that, you know, takes all the grip and the give away from racing. They're losing grip like they should over a long run, and so that's bringing in this element of, well, now we actually can do tire strategy again, where will two tires, you know, be enough of an advantage for us to hold on, or is four tires just really that much better? And that's what really makes those races exciting when you get down to the nitty-gritty of just a few laps to go and a late race caution, because that just completely opens the door to just differing ideas and differing strategies. So we haven't really talked about it, but I wanted to give an attaboy to Goodyear Racing so far this year, because they have brought just four fantastic tire compounds to start our racing season off, and I'm hoping that trend continues and they get a really good program for the Atlanta surface, something that really tackles that tough abrasive surface and gives up the grip well enough over the course of a run to really open the door for teams to have some differing pit strategies if we get a late race caution.
For sure. And now we need to go to the Cup Series because we only got a few minutes left. We have 38 cars for the 40-car field. And this field doesn't really change that much. I don't think we've really had a change after Daytona. We have the usuals: Daniel Swanson in the 96, Jimmy Hill, Reed Sorensen. You know, it's kind of the same. Garrett Smithy is back in the 51, J.J. Ealy in the 52, Joey Gase in the 53. But it's going to be some sponsors that are some interesting this weekend. Monster Energy, as usual, on Kurt Busch's car. Auto Trader, who normally is on the 2 car at Atlanta, is back there as usual. Acorns will be racing with Ross Chastain, which we should talk about how he's been struggling a little bit real quick. But I feel that this is going to be a great race. We got a lot of great drivers, and right off the bat, I got to say, Kevin Harvick is going to be the one to watch out for, no matter what.
Oh, yeah, definitely you can't keep your eyes off those Stewart Haas boards. The last year, they've been the guys to beat at Atlanta, but you kind of hit on it there a little bit. I'm kind of wondering about Ross Chastain, because it's been kind of a tale of two different stories with his Cup Series races he's had with the 6 car. He's run phenomenally, been, you know, consistently running inside the top 10, but it's his finishes where he's starting to lack. He's run into so many issues in stage 3, the last 3 races, that it's really, you know, hindered what have been great runs so far for him. Like, I go back to this last weekend. He was right there, solidly top 15, you know, top 20 all day, keeping minding his P's and Q's, keeping that Ford out of trouble. And then just the waning laps, he gets, you know, swept up into an incident and completely derails what was a good run going. Same with Phoenix. Same with, this week was Phoenix. Same with Auto Club. Same with Vegas. We've just seen that kind of been the tail, and I'm hoping that's not going to plague him for the rest of his starts in the sixth car, because I would really love to see him put together the full race, not only run good, but finish well as well, to kind of put forth the whole package and really put an exclamation that he deserves to be the substitute driver for Ryan Newman during this time.
I truly feel that one thing that we have to look with him is that he's never had this kind of equipment when it comes to the races. For him, he's always had subpar, you know, he's just more out there logging laps. You know, it's more or less Daytona or Talladega that he can actually excel and show what he can do. I feel one thing for him is that he is just still trying to get used to the fact that he has equipment that can run up there in, you know, in the top five and top ten. That's a big adjustment for him, considering he has, and it's not a full-time gig either. It's only part-time. And I think one thing is he might be pushing himself a little too hard with that to try to impress. But I will say this, with what happened in the past 2 years, him going from having a fantastic run in the four car, getting the opportunity to run the 48 car for, or the 42 car for Chip Ganassi, getting the win at Vegas, having an opportunity to win at Darlington, getting that full-time ride, having it taken away from him, not sure what he's going to do, then goes and almost wins the truck championship, and now has had, you know, he's running in top-tier equipment in the trucks, Xfinity, and in the Cup. I feel that he is working hard. He might be pushing himself a little too hard because he knows he has better equipment, and that might be hurting him, but I feel like this is a, you know, this is only the first three races he's ran at equipment that is way, way better than he's ever experienced. So I feel that maybe this weekend he's like, you know what, I need to take a step back. I need to refocus and try something else. He will be doing a triple header running with double header. He will not be in the truck series this weekend. He'll only be doing Xfinity and Cup.
And honestly, I think that'll definitely help him. Granted, the track time would probably really help if he was able to run all three series, but I think just focusing on those two is going to help him, you know, maybe not feel so pulled in all different directions and really can really center in and focus on having good runs. Because on the Xfinity side, too, we got to take a look at that. He's been kind of a disappointment. This will probably be a topic for next week, but I don't know. I felt like that number 10 car has not been as strong as I thought they were going to be to start the year. They've run into quite a few bad lucks and mishaps and had some, you know, things not go their way. That's also kind of led into this, but it's too early to press the panic button, but definitely something I've noticed is that the 10 team has struggled a little bit out of the gate, kind of stumbled almost.
Well, actually, I don't think they have. Daytona, they struggled, but then they had a 10th, an 8th, and a 9th in the past three races.
But those 10th, 8th, and 9th, I mean, like, the finishes were okay, but, like, the way they got there, the races weren't that great. Ross wasn't running, you know, consistently in the top 10 in a couple of those races, and I fully expected that team to be, you know, top 5 week in and week out. So I think that's where I'm kind of getting at. I feel like they're a little off the mark of where I expected them at. But then again, this is also the first time that colleague is fielding two full-time teams. So there may be a little, you know, stress and pressures there on the team itself trying to expand and get the resources in the right place. So that's why I say not too early to hit the panic, but definitely something I've noticed.
I think that is the biggest thing, is just because they are now expanding their field, and they are also running a third car partial schedule and a partial Cup Series car, it sounds like, in the super speedways. But this weekend in Phoenix, the big, you know, we look at the drivers that are there, we look at the stats, we look at everything. I already said who the big guy is. It's going to be Kevin Harvick. He is a fantastic racer at this track. He got his first ever Cup Series win at that track in the 29 for Richard Childress Racing back in 2001, racing against my guy, Jeff Gordon. But we also have, Kyle Busch is also one of those guys that's up there, along with Brad Keselowski. You know, those names kind of sound familiar, as if they ran pretty well this weekend.
You know, and you picked my pick right there. You mentioned him. Keselowski is the guy I'm going to be keeping my eye on. Team Penske's gotten off to a really strong start to 2020, and a lot of people were kind of questioning if they would with the big driver team shakeup over there. But Brad Keselowski has been the one I've been keeping my eye on the most, because I felt like he, you know, was going to be in the most precarious situation because he had such a good rapport with Paul Wolf. But so far, he's been looking pretty good, but he'll be the one I'll be keeping my eye on as we're almost out of time here, guys.
That's right. We got a minute. We got a minute left. So everybody, say goodbye. Say goodbye, Brady. What do you got to say to everybody?
I'm going
to
say goodbye to y'all, and thanks for tuning in to hear us all yibber-yabber.
Absolutely. Zach, what do you got to say to everybody?
Electric to electric boogaloo.
Electric boogaloo, okay. All I've got to say is let's go to Twin Peaks and get some wings. So this is Dr. John.
Yeah, fair enough.
With the one and only Charlotte Lyon with Zach and Brady, and we've had a great time. We'll see you next week, and you know it, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You got to say
Slider.
You know it. Bye.
Slider.